Down to business with Vodafone, Ireland's best and test network for voice and data, awarded by P3.
This week's industry review, we're taking a look at construction as the cranes reappear on the city skylines. How much of an upsurge have we seen in the industry? And is the growth only confined to urban areas, or can we expect to see it spread further afield? Joining me now to discuss these issues and take a look at a new report out on the industry is Tom Parlin. He's the Director General of the Construction Industry Federation. Brendan Crowley is the head of asset-based lending for the Dublin area with AIB. And Brian Conway is from Conway MacBeth Chartered Quantity Surveyors. You're all three all very welcome to the programme. Tom, I want to start with you. We're in Parlin country, aren't we? I thought I was going to see you come in on with the Marlborough hat and on the horseback like we used to see in those posters of old. That's not happening this morning.
I was looking to make it at all, Bobby, but I'm delighted to be here and delighted to, you're very welcome down to
Faithful County. No, it's great to be here. And firstly, can I just ask you about, I suppose, the local impact of having, it's almost hard to describe for people what's happening here this morning. It's a kind of a different environment. I'm sort of saying it's a cross between the ploughing, a mining town, and something you might see on a construction site, all sort of rolled into a quarry here in the back end of Tullamore.
Absolutely, and I suppose the quarry is, this area has been mined for sand and gravel for a long number of years, and clearly a lot of the motorways and a lot of the buildings around the country, the raw material came out of here. So it's a perfect site, and Brian tells me there's lots of room even for further expansion next year in terms of this site. But the scale of the machinery and the the technology that applies now and the sophistication of it, and obviously the cost of it as well. It's a massive. And you know, in terms of, we rate the value of the industry now, the value of construction, about 15 billion. Probably there's more than half a billion of that goes on each year on investment in plant and machinery.
Okay.
And, you know, that's all. It's all safer now for a start, and that has a problem. Health and safety is a problem. All of the new machines are superb in terms of safety. They're all very good in terms of the environment. They're probably all very good in terms of energy efficiency as well. It is expensive, and obviously there's a big business in funding and in financing that machinery.
Well, speaking
now as
well of funding, let's bring in Brendan Crowley from AIB, Head of Asset-Based Lending. Brendan, you're very welcome to the program. Just what is the research that you've recently conducted actually telling us?
Well, first and foremost, I suppose that we should be very optimistic about this industry and this sector. From an asset finance perspective, we see that throughout the period from 2008 up to the kind of 2010, 12 and 13, companies weren't replacing their assets, I suppose, because there was no line of sight on what projects were coming over the hill given what was happening in the economy. But from kind of 2011, 2012 onwards, that replacement cycle started to really pick up pace, and it started to really, really take off, I suppose, in 2014, and it's continued like that for the last couple of years.
And Brendan, the impact, and I was talking to one of our contributors earlier about this, but the impact of, I suppose, repossessions of companies in this sector going bust, of a flood of a glut of second-hand machinery on the market, that must have caused almost irreparable damage to the sector, that it's only now actually recovering from it.
I definitely took a hit, and look, there was obviously machinery that unfortunately some companies didn't survive that period. You know, a lot of the machinery that was, I suppose, was resold actually went out of the country at that time to auctions in Europe and that. So it's not that there was a huge amount of second-hand machinery available in Ireland. There was some, but we can see now, which is great, an awful lot of new machinery being bought. And you can see, looking around the show here today, that there's some fantastic kit and assets here.
And what about the appetite for risk now with banks and this sector? Like, what have you learned from the past in terms of lending now and lending to, I suppose, people who are developing, people who are at the early stage of development, and particularly when, as Tom said there, we're talking about machinery that's used for large-scale infrastructure projects?
The appetite for risk is strong. I mean, all the indicators show that we could be very optimistic about where this industry is going. What we've learned in the past, I suppose we learned an awful lot, everyone has. Our focus going forward is to make sure that we are supporting good and viable projects, and not just in the greater urban areas, but spread out around the country from large-scale projects right down through to smaller SME owner-operator guys who are looking to, I suppose, get involved from a subcontracting
basis. There's probably, though, not a lot you can do about that in terms of, you know, where the demand is where the demand is? As a lender, there's not a lot you can do about
that. We can stimulate that, I suppose. That investment has to come from elsewhere. But we are there then to support, if there are projects available, we are there to support the operators. When they need assets, we'll step in to provide the support.
Let me bring in our third guest. He's from Conway Macbeth Quantity Surveyors. Brian Conway, you're very welcome to the programme, Brian. Brian, the cost of building, and again, as a QS, you'll know this, the cost of building didn't really fall a whole lot during the recession years. And again, I just speak as a consumer on that front. And why was that, given that the industry was pretty much on its knees?
Well, I suppose the cost has, it's levelled out. I mean, materials are still the same, the cost to produce. Labour has reduced a certain margin. But one of the things about it was construction is that it's not so much the pure construction costs, it's the other things around the whole construction. It's the soft costs of development. Those other things are the significant portions of costs in the market there.
And what then about, like, in terms of where cost is now, how do we remain competitive in the sector? How do we ensure that, you know, that there isn't labour coming in from overseas, for instance, that we actually maintain the employment that we have? Because there's clearly a demand for carpenters, electricians, as the sector improves. Mm-hmm. And we need to make sure, you know, that how do we remain competitive in that area?
Well, I think there's a growing demand for resources in it. And if you look at the reports out there and you see the importance of construction in the industry and the potential that that has to people bring people back to employment, then resources is going to be an issue for us and it's managing that. How do we go about that? I think we're seeing an awful lot of migration of people coming back who were in the industry. Skilled people have learned their skills offshore and then they've come back, which is very good. But equally, we have a young population that it needs to be attracted to the industry. We need to show stability in the industry. We need to show that there's a longer-term plan and it is attractive to the school leavers of today and tomorrow.
Tom Parlin, are you comfortable that we have the necessary sort of training, apprenticeships to satisfy the needs of the industry in place as we speak today?
No, we certainly are conscious that there's going to be a skill shortage. We commissioned a report there by DKM, and just as has been said here by previous speakers, it's quite positive about the future of the industry in terms of the growth. They reckon that over the next 5 years it will grow by about 9% year on year. That's to just satisfy what the government have said they're going to do on housing, what the government said they're going to spend on capital investment, and the FDI and refurb. Obviously, refurb, whether it be your own back kitchen or whether it be a hotel or an office block or whatever, very little was done for maybe 6 or 7 years, and now there's a big push there. So that's suggesting we need to grow. And it also, the big figure that we were looking to get at, we need an extra 110,000 people. Now, they're not really coming through the system. We had a terrific apprenticeship scheme before the collapse in the industry and the collapse in the economy. And unfortunately, that sort of fell asunder, and people didn't get to finish out their apprentices. And now we know that the education system is very much directed towards third level. Everybody is heading for university and not being directed into the trade. So we're working on that. We're working well with SULIS, with the education training boards, and good initiatives there. But still, I believe that the Department of Education need to focus more people into skills and into trades.
And what will happen if there is, and there's already some talk that skills gap is actually with us, that it's not actually going to happen. It's here as we speak. Like, it's not something that you can fix overnight. Sure, it's not.
No, but I suppose, like machinery, construction labour is very mobile. When we collapsed here, we lost 180,000 people out of the industry, mostly Irish, that went all over the world. They are coming back. Actually, the industry is employing 1,000 extra people per month for the last 2.5 years now. So it is growing, and it will grow even more. But, you know, we still have the people to continue to attract the people that left. Clearly, we have a workforce available from over 300 million people across Europe. And there's a lot of Eastern European people here working in construction, and more will come if to see the job opportunities. And who knows with Brexit whether we will get a lot of the, you know, the Brexit seems to be about immigration and about not appreciate, or about Britain not appreciating the immigrants that are there. They may choose come to Ireland instead. So it is a challenge to us, but I think for the government, you know, I had a big involvement in agriculture as president of IFA and being a farmer and so on. And agriculture, that's not really any bigger than the total construction industry in terms of its worth and the amount of people it employs. It has a Ministry of Agriculture, it has a couple of ministers, it has Chagisk, it has Bord Bia, it has a whole lot of supports. If I, as the CIF Director General, want to go and lobby anyone, I could have to knock on six ministers' door to get a particular. So
we need a fragmentation
much,
there.
Yeah, we need a much bigger focus. And if we are to deliver the very important housing that's clearly a crisis, the very important infrastructure that's necessary, we need the government to focus with a sector group that somebody will take charge and say, look at lads, this is how we're going to manage it.
I want to just ask you as well about quality employment as well, Tom. Like, that business of, I suppose, a construction company employing five people but using 300 subcontractors, is that a good model for sustainable employment?
Well, you know, it is the global model now that we have. The big contractors, the names that we know about, the big turnover firms, they're mainly project management companies, and they hire specialists. And whether it be the groundwork or the machinery specialists or the roofers or the tilers or the glaziers or whatever, that's just people are specialising. It's a bit unusual now. I know in house building it's slightly different. You will get people that will cross the different divides and so on. But generally in the main contracting, specialists are doing all the work. They're employing or they're using the specialist equipment as well. And, you know, labour is being cut down to a large extent on sites as well. But I think that's one of the issues. Sites need to be work-friendly. They need to be safe for a start.
Yeah.
And there's a massive emphasis within the industry now on health and safety on sites. They need to be sort of sustainable. Like, we don't want this yo-yo. Unfortunately, the Irish construction industry went up to massive peaks. Like, in 2006, it was almost a quarter of the entire economy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Anyone would have said in advance that this is madness, this is not going to last. But government kept taking in the money, the people kept flocking here, and all of a sudden we went over the cliff. So I think now, in terms of infrastructural investment in particular, and there's a big deficit there now at the moment that we need to level out, and that the government would commit, you know, X amount. We're the lowest in Europe. Of all of the countries in Europe, we have the lowest percentage of our GDP.
This is this 42 billion government infrastructure capital plan.
Yeah, we're the lowest in less than 2% now. Sort of back in the 2000s, we were doing about 4.5%, 5% each year into infrastructure. So we've dropped that down, and clearly it can be seen. You know, around the country, the deficits in terms of, like, we still have a lot of schools necessary. Our roads outside of the motorways are in bad need of upgrading. Water and sewage certainly is a major restrictant in terms of building residential homes. So, and the whole regional development, like, Dublin is overloaded. You know, everybody, and in construction, like, there's a massive lot of construction workers spending 4 and 5 hours travelling to and from their work in Dublin. Every day, and that doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, and again, I was looking in the Irish Times this morning, there it is there, welcome to Black Lion, 46% occupancy rate. Houses built there that no one needs or wants.
Yeah. And that was, I suppose, a factor of the planning in the past. But, you know, I think if we have good infrastructure in the country, if you're an FDI, and we have massive projects going on at the moment, we have a number of projects that are worth over €1 billion being built, like the Facebook data centre out in Clonee. That's over €1 billion's worth. The Bristol Myers Squibb manufacturing a plan for a new cancer drug on the edge of Dublin, over €1 billion. But if any of those players, like, there isn't an option to Dublin at the moment. And the most ridiculous infrastructure deficit of all is the fact that Limerick and Cork, the second and third biggest cities in the country,
have a
farm road almost connecting them, and a dangerous road. So if that infrastructure was there, it would make a great counterbalance to Dublin.
Let me bring back in Brian Conway. Brian, just the way that construction companies operate now, that just we were talking there about, Tom, that use of the subcontractor, the specialist units, as Tom outlined, is that the way it's going to continue? Is that the model now for best practice in terms of construction?
I think that it is the global model.
Yeah.
And it is reflective of the procurement systems and how we procure our contracts. It's a very disjointed industry. You're only as good as your last contract. And therefore, you know, if you're going to build the workforce and build the longevity, then you also need to build partnership and framework agreements, which I think is very important. And I see the stuff coming out for the sort of the social housing schemes and the various other schemes. And instead of one-off schemes, we're looking at a multitude of schemes and partnering approaches. Those things that give stability in the market and give a longer-term view then that also will help the type of employment, and maybe we'll move away to less self-employed. But certainly, as Tom says, specialism is out there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a negative, really, because there's an awful lot of small companies, indigenous companies, that are specialising in their particular field.
Well, I think it applies almost to any discipline, that specialisation is kind of where it's at. It also builds in tremendous two-way flexibility. Yeah. Does it not?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think it does, yeah. I mean, and I think, and equally the subcontracting down the line, you know, and as Tom talks about, the amount of employment and indirect employment that is involved in the industry is massive, and it certainly is one of the stimulants to getting people back to work.
What are your thoughts, Brendan? We're talking about the government's capital infrastructure plan, $42 billion. We effectively need permission from Europe, do we not, to undertake these projects?
We do indeed, yeah. And so, from my perspective, from our perspective in AIB, I mean, it's important that we work with all the key stakeholders, the likes of the Construction Industry Federation, the government, and all the other stakeholders, to make sure that we're providing support from a finance perspective. And from an advisory perspective, and that we are available to our customers to help them to put in place these viable projects.
You know? Right. And when you say viable, what's your definition of viable, that you get paid back the money you lent? Is it as simple as that?
Yeah. No, well, it's not just amount. It's, of course, I mean, yeah. but it's got to be viable for the companies and the industry themselves. I mean, it doesn't benefit anybody to provide support for projects that might struggle. And Tom mentioned there about, you know, a development that is very low occupancy rates, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so anyone, irrespective of whether it's, the government investing or anyone else, you know, there's no point in getting into a project like that, because it doesn't help anyway. It doesn't help the builders, the developers, it doesn't help the small to medium enterprises or the owner-operators or anyone involved in it, effectively.
So how do you evaluate? What's the difference in terms of your own evaluation of a project now as opposed to maybe 5 years ago?
We probably spend an awful lot more time talking to the customer and actually looking at the business plan, looking at where it's going to go. Obviously, there's a huge amount of amount of financial information we have to get from the customers, and that's absolutely fair. But it's about sustainability of the project. It's about making sure that the location is right, making sure that, as Brian mentioned, the costing, the procurement, and all that's right. So we spend a lot of time with our customers now, chatting it through with them and making sure that they know our position and we know theirs.
Okay. Tom Parlin, just I was drawn by an article in today's Indo by Mark Keenan today, basically saying that it's time to stop faffing about and start treating this housing crisis like the emergency that it really is. And he draws an analogy between this guy, Herbie Sims, who apparently sorted out our housing problems in the 30s and 40s. And basically he's saying that, quite simply, the state needs to become a developer. No one else will do it. So put the resources in place and get on with it.
Yeah,
is he singing off the same sheet as you?
Absolutely. Well, I think it's certainly time to stop faffing around, as he says. And I suppose there's an awful lot of commentators have commented on housing, but it's basically down to it being viable for builders to build. And I said the industry is growing. If you look in Dublin, 70-plus cranes, they're building commercial property. It isn't viable to build residential apartment blocks that are needed at the moment. Just the sums don't add up. And I know there's been a lot of commentary about VAT. VAT and housing. Like, there's 13.5% VAT applies by this government to residential housing. No VAT in the north of Ireland, no VAT in the UK. It's a major cost. It's about 40 grand a house.
People are genuinely concerned that developers and builders will trouser it. They'll effectively pocket it.
Of course. Well, there's no chance of them pocketing it at the moment, because they just can't afford to build. And the only building is in Dublin. And if you take, I know the CSO came out with a very in-depth study about housing during the week, and it shows that generally around the country, you'll buy a three-bed house cheaper than you'll build it at the moment. So that doesn't warrant very much for the building. So I think on the one hand, we need to invest in the infrastructure and encourage some of the new jobs outside of the city, that it's much more viable to live in Tullamore or in Mullingar or even in Blackline or wherever, you know. But secondly, money is a problem still. And CIF have a big meeting in Dublin next Monday, And you mentioned about the fiscal rules that are restricting what we can spend. We're having Commissioner Phil Hogan, we're having the Vice President of the European Investment Bank, Minister Heather Humphreys, and a big lot of the stakeholders, including the banks and all the other professionals around the country, to look at that.
But is it still not a huge problem that the government is taking 40% of the price of every new house? Like, does that not have to change?
Well, I think whilst we have a crisis, I think it has to. Of course, everyone, the machinery guys are paying their VAT, and everybody has to pay tax. We all appreciate that. But I think while we have a crisis, until we're building 25,000 houses a year, I think there should be a reduction in the VAT. I think it would just make eminent sense at this
stage.
And
why is it? Why can't we seem to grasp the nettle, or we just seem to have we're rabbits in the headlights around the unoccupied premises, the vacant premises over shops, the places that just an idiot would see that somebody should be living here, rather than seeing it boarded up, or rather than seeing it idle.
I spend a lot of my time down in the country. Roscrea, even though I'm an Offaly man, Roscrea is my local town. You drive up Castle Street in Roscrea any night, and there might be two or three cars. So people are not living in the country towns anymore. A lot of that has got to do with the new building regulations. Living over a commercial premises and the fire safety rules and the access rules
surely we've got to change all that.
Of course. And I know there is an initiative to look at that. But officialdom, and the new building regulations are guaranteeing new houses in a very, very good quality product for people. But in the interim, a bit of common sense would apply
I know it's easy to oversimplify these things. It's clearly a complex issue, and everything seems to be linked to everything else.
Yeah.
But unless somebody is actually, really... And, I think, to be fair to Simon Coveney, he thought his Rebuilding Ireland plan would sort... But he's struggling with it, clearly.
Yeah, it's taking time. There's no question about it. Like, you can't magic up houses. And there's no question about it. Officialdom is still dreadfully slow. And the minister, and rightly so, he has provided funding for social housing. But it's local authorities and the Department of Housing that are going to have to go ahead. And I know from my members that have been identified as preferential bidders that they are one day to tender, and they're waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting to get to go ahead to build very important units. So that needs to be sped up. But there seems to be a reluctance from individuals to take personal responsibility for signing off on a project now.
Okay. Well, listen, I'll say one thing. You're in a sector that is growing. You're in a sector that there's a big demand, and I think it's about managing the supply demand thing is your biggest challenge. So it's probably a decent enough problem if you can get under it. But listen, big thanks to my guests, Tom Parlin, Director General of the Construction Industry Federation, Brian Conway from Conway Macbeth Quantity Surveyors, and Brendan Crowley, Head of Asset Based Lending in Dublin for AIB. Thank you very much for joining me.
Down to business with Vodafone, Ireland's best and test network for voice and data, awarded by P3.